Our mission here, our mission, let's review. I'm articulating, clarifying our mission statement because I haven't settled in on anything that's like beautiful, perfect, like this is exactly it. But I'm clarifying as we go. And so each week you kind of see this get clarified a little bit more. And so last week we talked about this. Remember last week, those that were here, I'm trying to hold up this cross, tape these things onto the cross that's behind me. I figured out a better way. Just lean it against the wall and we're good to go. And so last week I had a few people that were laughing and saying, he's going to drop the cross. And I didn't. So here's our mission statement. Can you see this in the back? Our mission. Here's what we are doing. We want to, first of all, introduce people to Jesus. That's our mission. That's our goal. In life, no matter where we are, we want to introduce people to Jesus because Jesus is everything because of what he's done for us. He came, he lived on this planet, lived as a human being, even though he is fully God, he's fully man, and he lived here for about 33 years, and he died, and then he rose again. The resurrection is what my faith is connected to. It's literally not connected to the Bible. Big statement. My faith is connected to the resurrection. The fact that Jesus Christ came, as predicted by the prophets, the fact that he lived here for 33 years, that's cool because we all live here and some are older than 33 years. But the most incredible thing that ever happened is the fact that Jesus Christ, after he died, and he predicted it, and I've said this and I got this from others. Andy Stanley kind of said this a lot and I get it from him. If someone can say, I'm going to die, but in 3 days I'm going to be risen again, I'll be alive again, and they actually do it, I'm following whatever they have to say. Fair enough? And that's where my faith goes. And so, first of all, I want to introduce people to Jesus. I just did. I introduced you to Jesus, okay? First thing we want to do is introduce people to Jesus. And then, as they believe, they say, instead of it just being a historical figure and somebody that's out there, I put my faith in Jesus Christ. I'm following Jesus with my life. I'm saying, look, he's everything. He's my Lord. He's my Savior. I believe. As they believe, then I want to fully follow him together. Fully follow him together. So together is we're putting arms around each other. We're doing this as a group, as a few people, small or large group, whatever it is, and as a church together. We're fully following him together. In order to fully follow him, it takes steps of faith almost every single day. I was talking to somebody before the service, and I had given them this book to work through and some things they just work on growing through, and they're mad at me right now because that's challenging them to take steps of faith. And they're like, I don't like you, Pastor, go away. And that's the reality. I'm being sarcastic. You can, okay, laugh. Yeah, it was bad sarcasm. Okay, they're not really mad at me. But you know when you're challenged to take steps of faith and it's hard? It's like totally outside of your comfort zone. Like, I don't want to do it, but I know I should. That's faith. I'm fully following him together. And that sometimes it's I'm going to forgive. Sometimes it's I'm redirecting my life. Sometimes I'm going to this person or that one. There's all kinds of different steps of faith that God takes you on. And if you haven't taken a step of faith yet this year, in 2019, you're missing out on God doing something in your life. God's always up to growing us and encouraging us as we are fully following him to take steps of faith. And if you're confused about that, let me know. We'll talk some more. Matter of fact, we have pizza with the pastor after church. We can talk even then about it. So come on down and check it out. So that's our mission, to introduce others to Jesus. And as they believe, we fully follow him together. So there's the background of what we do. And I want to keep on going back to that, because if we miss out on the foundational reason that we gather together, then we're going to miss out on a whole lot. And so I hope to wear that out as we go. So we're in the book of Exodus, and we're studying this together, and we're seeing that the things that God is doing in this nation called Israel. And what God is doing is he takes them from a place of slavery, delivers them out of slavery and into this wilderness, or leading up to the promised land that he has talked about. And so this is about, we've covered about a year's worth of time in the life of Israel. And here's the whole point. The whole point of what God's doing back then and what God continues to do in this nation of Israel, what he did all the way through leading up to Jesus, is that he does this in Isaiah chapter 49, verse 6. Isaiah the prophet talks about this in a great summary verse. He says, I will make you, Israel, as a light. We need lights, yes? As a light for all the nations. That includes us. All nationalities, every people group, every ethnicity. I will make you as a light for everyone, every generation of all times, that my salvation, God's salvation, may reach to the end of the earth. Here's the whole point. I'm bringing Israel out so that I can show that I am the light. And in that, I'm showing you that I am the salvation for the whole earth. And in that, we see that this is just the beginning. That in the future, we have Jesus Christ who then comes out of Israel as a Jewish person. He comes and he lives that life that's fulfilling all the prophecies. He dies and then he's risen again. And we place our faith and believe in him. All right, so there's the background of it. And it's kind of like I see God saying within this, you know, Israel is this little light of mine. You know that song, you know, back in Sunday school or kids' church? This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine. How many know this song? I'm going to let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Don't let Satan it out, right? Okay, anyway, let's move on. Like, really? He's singing? Yes, it's fun. Singing's my favorite. All right. It's like God saying, this little light of mine. So where we're at in Exodus is we've spent the last 12 weeks journeying through a year in the life of Israel as they've gotten out of slavery. And so we're journeying through the last 12. And so now we're going to really rapidly conclude the book of Exodus, because now you have this meeting that God is having with Moses up on the mount. And as he's having this meeting, he's saying, here's the rules of how to set up this nation. And so that covers the majority of the end of the book of Exodus. And there's two significant things that I want to point out within that. Today I want to point out one, and then in 2 weeks I want to point out another one, and we'll conclude and finish the book of Exodus within this year, which is surprising. And so last week we saw Moses was meeting with God. And do you remember what mount he was meeting with God on? Which one? Sinai? How many would say Horeb? It's the same thing. Good job. All right. And you'll see that, by the way, it's in chapter 33, verse 6, if you're curious. It talks about that as well. Anyway, so he's on Mount Sinai and Mount Horeb. That's the same thing. Commentators agree with that, and it's mentioned here as well. And so he's up there speaking with God, and God gives him the Ten Commandments. Moses is there, and he comes back, and he gives them the Ten Commandments. And then the people respond. They say, all right, cool. We'll obey what God has to say. The only problem is, Moses, God kind of scares us, like that lightning and the thunder thing and the cloud thing that he's got going on the mountain. He really scares us. So, Moses, you meet with God. We'll listen to what you have to say. We don't want God to, like, kind of be that close to us. And so that's how that works out. And so Moses then goes back up to the mountain to meet with God to get more instructions from God. Have you ever heard the phrase, when the cat's away, what? The mice will play. The one great thing about cats is that, it just comes out, I don't know. It's not even in my notes, is that they are great. Most of them are great at mousers, and if they're not, I don't know. But when the cat's away, the mice will play. And here's what I find, that Moses goes up the mountain and he's like the cat that's now away. The boss is away, dad's away, mom's away. What do you do? What's your life like when your boss isn't looking? Candy Crush, here we go. Your boss is across the way, just let you know, right? What do you do when mom and dad aren't watching? Netflix, YouTube, you know? What do you do when your spouse isn't watching? Sleep in, take a nap, right? And we have all kinds of things. When the teacher's away and you have a substitute teacher. Yeah, good luck, substitute teacher, right? And we have all kinds of things, and here's the reality. The test of a true character is what a person does when no one is looking. The test of true character is what a person does when no one is looking. And here, when we see Moses going back up the mountain, he's gone for a while now, we see that when the cat's away, the people will play. Years ago, when I was the associate pastor of the church here, Dick Vaughn was the pastor, and he would go away on vacation like once a year. And that one week, you know, I would get to preach that Sunday, and it would be the awesomest thing. But here's the funny thing. If he let people know what happened with the attendance? Nobody showed up. Like, half the church is there. Like, yeah, we got to come. You know, Junior over here is going to preach, but it's okay. We'll got to listen. And is he done yet? It seemed like. And so that happened. And him and I had these conversations. I don't understand. I'm still preaching the God's word. What's the deal with that? And things like that. And then I became a senior pastor. And it happened again. I'm like, wait a second. What's the deal here? And we had this phrase going on, and so that's why I try never to tell you when I'm going away, unless if it's somebody you really love to hear, you know? It's a surprise. You come in, and he's like, oh, he's not preaching. That way, you never know when the cat's away. You always show up because, you know, that's just the way life goes. But anyway, so Moses goes away to meet with God. And here's how the people respond. Exodus chapter 32. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, how long did he delay? It's 40 days. He's there for over a month. Now, let's contextualize this a little bit. How many of you remember what you were doing in August? Wow, three people. Whew. All right, we have memory issues here. August was just a few months ago, yes? They've been out of Egypt only since, like, we would look back at August, maybe July. So they are really just recovering from slavery. And they've left Egypt. They've gone across the Red Sea. Now they're in this place all by themselves, a brand new nation. And while they're here as a brand new nation, for 3 months, there's all kinds of weird things going on. They run out of food, and God, where's the food? And manna comes, and now they have food. And they run out of water, and God, where's the water? And water comes. God provides all kinds of things for them, and God's been awesome. And now Moses goes up on the mount, and Moses up on the mount for 40 days. You would think that they would look back over the last year and be like, he'll come back eventually. It'll be okay. But like us, how many of you are patient when it comes to finding a parking spot at the outlets during this Christmas season or up at the Deffer Mall? Are you good with this? You know, I've watched a few people do some really interesting things this Christmas season already. You know, I need that parking space, and we're not patient. Here Israel is watching as Moses, their leader, and in their terms, Moses would be like a god to them. He is the chief leader representing God, and they're looking as Moses is gone, and so then they look back and say, there's a problem here. What do we do when our leader is no longer here with us? So they gathered themselves together to Aaron, and they said to him, up, make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. Here's what they instantly do. After about 40 days or so, somewhere in that time frame, they give up on Moses. They say, hey, listen, Aaron, buddy, you've been with us all along. Moses, he went away, he came back. We've known him for about a year. He's a little, you know, the honeymoon's over kind of a thing. And he's kind of okay, but he's gone. He's probably not coming back. He's been gone for a while now. So Aaron, here's what we need. We need you to make us a god that will lead us. This looks a lot like the Egyptian gods that God showed were powerless. So here's what Aaron does. What would you do if you're in Aaron's shoes? Okay, sounds like a plan. Here's what we're going to do. And it's as if there's an instant response from Aaron where he responds to them. He says, so Aaron said to them, take off your rings of gold that are in your ears and your wives and your sons and your daughters and bring them to me. So get all this gold together and bring them to me. You're like, you want a god? Got you covered here. So all the people took off the rings of gold that were in their ears and brought them to Aaron, and he received the gold from their hand and fashioned it in with a graving tool. He was very intentional and made a golden calf. So he spends the rest of the day making a golden calf. We're not sure how big it is, but it must be big enough. They said, these are your gods, O Israel. Notice, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. When Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord. And they rose up early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. So they're having a total party atmosphere as they're worshiping, valuing their new God, and saying that this God that is just created by Aaron is the one that brought them out of Egypt. So he's the one that we should be worshiping and excited about. They simply wanted a visible God to lead them. You ever do this? Let's make this a little bit more personal. You ever get tired of waiting for God? So you raise up a new God. Like maybe you don't take your silver, your gold, or your silver, or whatever, and you make a little golden calf and put it on the table or something. That's not. But maybe you do something different, where you say, you know, I've really been waiting for that right person to marry or date or whatever, and I'm tired of waiting, so I'll take matters into my own hand because I've been praying for at least 3 days and nothing happened, or I've been praying for a month and nothing happened. Or, you know what, I'm tired of waiting on God for this thing over here. I'm tired of waiting for God to show up, so this is what I'm going to do. And I find we have all kinds of vices, I'll say, or gods in our life. James talks about this. He says, flee from idols. It's something we still have today. Things that we worship that we place above God. All kinds of things. We worship video games. Here's what we do when we're just kind of stuck and it's kind of our go-to place, right? Where it's like, I'm waiting and I'm tired of waiting and I'm just going to play video games instead. And I'm not saying that video games are evil. I'm saying we kind of do that, right? We're impatient. I don't want to wait anymore, so I'm going to jump into this thing and I'm just going to just blow my time and who cares? And to go a little bit more deep, and this there would be a problem with this, people jump into pornography. You know what? I'm tired of waiting to have satisfaction over here, so I'm going to look for satisfaction in this. Or I'm going to spend money that I really don't have to spend because I want my life to be better. I want to feel better. And we go and we put priorities into our life. We value things above God. Instead of waiting for God to do what he wants, to show up when he wants, we just kind of push into doing it our own way. We get into partying, complaining, drinking, sleeping, smoking. Like, it's all of the above. You never grow out of this. It doesn't matter if you're 70 or 80 years old. You don't grow out of this. Maybe you don't get into certain things that you used to. Maybe you don't play Fortnite. Okay, fair enough. But there's other things that you do. Instead of waiting on God, you start complaining or gossiping or having things like that that are going on. It's equally the same in that it's wrong, where you say, I must have this now. And there becomes a go-to that we have that says, here's what I'm going to do. It's as if when the cat's away, the mouse will play. And we all are here at different places in our life where when God doesn't seem to show up, when we want God to show up, we do what we want in order to get by, to feel better, to think better about the life that we're living. We raise up essentially a new leader, and that new leader is you. Most of us don't make as good of a leader as God. Would you agree? I would say all of us don't make as good of a leader as God. So the people are partying. All kinds of crazy things that are going on. This is not G-rated anymore. This would be really messed up. Verse 7. And the Lord said to Moses, go down, for your people, I like this. It's interesting. There's a play on words here. Go down for your people, whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt. It's as if he's going back and saying, this is what they're saying, so I'm just going to call you on this. They have corrupted themselves, verse 8. They have turned aside quickly out of the way that I commanded them. They have made for themselves a golden calf and have worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt, which is a total lie. And the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. He says this several times in the next chapter or so here. He says, now therefore, let me alone that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them in order that I may make a great nation of you. Moses, I'm tired of them. I'm going to make a great nation out of you, and I'm going to wipe everyone out that's down there. Now, a few observations about this text. We see that the same God who saw them in slavery and raised them up and brought them out of slavery is the same God that can see them in their sin as well. You ever think that God's not able to see you at certain points of your life? You ever think you can hide from God? It's as if we live that way at times where, well, the boss isn't looking, so it's okay to be this way. Time out. God still seeing what you're doing. In Psalm 139, it talks about God being everywhere present at the same time. He is omnipresent, we call it. And so they're acting as if God only saw them then, or God probably doesn't exist. And what we observe here is that God is present. God does see what's going on while he's having a conversation with Moses. And I love this picture because you see that if I'm praying to God, God could answer my prayer. And if you're praying to God, God can answer your prayer. And God sees everything that's going on, hears everything that's going on. God is above all things. He's not limited like we are. So God sees. And then we see the second part, that God is not passive with sin. We have this idea today that God is passive with sin. God, when he looks at what we are doing, he doesn't care whether we do the right or wrong thing. God does care. He is not passive. In Galatians chapter 6, Paul, who is writing this out for us, says, whatever you sow, that is what you will reap. That you have this punishment that's going to come or this blessing that's going to come as a result of what you're doing. There is a God who sees, and God is not passive about what we are doing, our sinfulness. So if you're living in a way that you have a go-to that's other than God, where you're raising up a golden calf in your life in different things, and if this was a small group, I would have you turn to the person next to you and say, okay, what's your golden calf? Right? I wouldn't do that here because some of you don't know the people next to you, and that'd be really embarrassing. You're like, I don't have one. I don't know what to say. And you'd lie in church, and that would be a really bad thing, so we won't go there. But God sees the golden calves in our lives, and no one's exempt. Aaron, the top guy, he's the one, like right under Moses is Aaron. He's the one that's like, all right, let's do this thing. Takes the gold and fashions it. Doesn't matter where you're at. We all are susceptible to raising up golden calves in our lives. So here's what God says. I'm ready to wipe him out. Moses, I'm just going to hold on to you, and everybody else is going to be dead. But Moses pushes back in verse 11. It's fascinating. A lot of theology in this that I can't really get into in one message. We'll be here till 3, and some of you would like to eat pizza before that point. It says, but Moses implored the Lord his God and said, O Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people whom you have brought out of this land? He's pointing the finger back. I didn't bring them out. You brought them up. You called me. You said it's all on you. Why should the Egyptians then say, with evil intent did he bring them out to kill them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth? Turn from your burning anger and relent from the disaster against your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your own self and said to them, I will multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven. In all this land that I have promised, I will give to your offspring, and they shall inherit it forever. And the Lord relented from this disaster that he has spoken of bringing on his people. He's pushing back and saying, God, for your glory, for your name's sake, don't do this. Moses is a man of God because he's most concerned with the glory of God. He's most concerned about the name of God. We sing about God's name oftentimes here because we should be so consumed with the name of God. So he begs for God's mercy. He begs for God's grace, and God does. He shows his mercy and grace. So Moses comes back down. He has a conversation with the people, and it's not a good conversation. He takes the golden calf. He grinds it up in the water, and he says, here, have a milkshake. And so they drink the milkshake that he's made with that, and they get sick, and it's really not good. God has a plague that's poured out on them, and that God pours judgment out on the people of Israel. And he goes to Aaron, and he says to Aaron, what were you thinking? Wouldn't you say that? If you're the owner, and you go to the manager, and the manager totally messes things up for the day, and you're like, what were you thinking? Why'd you close the store down or make it worse? Why'd you give everything away? You know, and to go way worse, here's Aaron, who's leading them totally against God. He says, why did you do this? In verse 21, he says, what did this people do to you that you have brought such a great sin upon them? You're my brother. We're doing this together. What did they do to you? Did they tie you up? Did they torture you? How did you cave in? And Aaron said this in verse 22, let not the anger of my Lord burn hot. You know the people, that they are set on evil. For they said to me, make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up by the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. So I said to them, let any of you have gold, take it off. So they gave it to me, and I threw it in the fire, and out came this calf. It was a magical thing. Just a weird moment. I took all the gold, had it in a little bucket, you know, 5-gallon bucket from Lowe's, and we just went, whoo, or Home Depot, whatever it is, and we threw it in, and out on the other side, it was just a magical moment, and there's a golden calf over there. Couldn't believe it, Moses. It's the most amazing thing. What's he really saying? I feared people more than I feared God. When I felt that God was not looking, I was more consumed with being appreciated or accepted by the people around me instead of the God that I serve and love. We could do a whole series. We could do this all year long. We could talk about acceptance and our desire for acceptance. It's a natural thing, but oftentimes our desire for acceptance will override our relationship with God. God's design, God's desire is that he is above all things, that we fully follow him together. And so when it comes to, I'm consumed with being accepted by other people, I push pause and say, no, it's not about whether you accept me in where I'm at. I'm going to do the right thing regardless. That's character done right. I think if I were asked, probably every single one of us struggles with acceptance at some level. I want to be accepted by my spouse, so I'll kind of cave a little bit. I want to be accepted by my neighbors, so I'll just cave a little. I want to be accepted by my boss or my coworker or my kids even. It's fascinating to watch parents wanting to be accepted by their kids so badly that they'll compromise in different ways. Or kids, you want to be accepted by those at school and you compromise, and that's where Aaron is. He compromised at such a malevolent level, and it destroyed everything that was going on. Fear of rejection, desire for acceptance. And so God then turns and he pours out this plague on them, and many people die and many are sick as a result of it. And Moses goes and he prays and he goes back to God, and God then relents and he pulls back. But it's just a fascinating next couple chapters as you read it through, and then you see how God moves and works. And we'll kind of finish this up next week. Sin results in judgment. Is it okay for God to judge? I mean, we live in a culture that says it's not. How dare God judge? How dare God punish? I mean, that's the norm. I've got 5 kids. My kids are old enough now to tell me how to punish my younger kid. It's really a funny kind of a statement, you know. I think you should punish him for that. I got this. Like, I've raised you, I figured it out, and thanks for the advice. And maybe they're right. I'm not going to admit that, right? When I'm walking down the street with my child and they go to run across the street in the busy highway and they don't listen to me when I say stop, should I punish them? Every parent would say, yes. And if you don't, and you say, just let them do their thing. They've got a free spirit. It's so amazing. Let them play on Evesham, on the black horse or white horse bike. It'd be so cool to watch this thing. Just sit back and just celebrate their freedom and their independence. You know, if you saw me do this, you would punch me in the throat. Right? You're like, what kind of idiot are you? Do you not love your child enough to protect them? They're not listening at all to the protection that you're giving to them. Do you realize that God's instruction is protective in nature? It's just guiding. And as they're running an opposite direction and they're erecting a new God, every time you push God out, what you do is you push in self-centeredness. And that's exactly where they're going to lean. They're going to lean into, I think my God should be like this. I want it to be my way. And they'll end up in wars and fighting, and there's going to be a dictator, and it's going to be someone that hurts other people, guaranteed. When God's not the one that's in charge, we always lean towards self-centeredness, and it always results in pain down here. It may not be immediate, but it is eventual. And some of you have lived that. Some of you get that because you've lived that with other people, and you're like, yeah, I wish they had God in their life. It would have totally changed them. When we submit to and we love, we follow God, it changes everything. And that's really the point. And I think sometimes we view the cat, we view God as taking away all the fun in life. You know, mom and dad, they're just taking away all the fun. God's just taking away all the fun. And God's like, no, I just don't want you to run across that road over there. It's going to kill you. So, let's pause. Let's pull into this a little bit more. What does it look like? What does life look like when the cat's away? See, I'm confused. What does it look like? What does it feel like? What is life like when God is silent? Because they're spending 40 days of silence. They're not sure where God is. This Moses guy, I mean, we've only been out for a couple months, and this is all brand new, and Moses is gone, so we need to do something. We get impatient if we don't get that parking spot that they were supposed to get, right? We get impatient if they cut us off. We get impatient of all kinds of things. Just think about your phone. You pick it up, and you want to get on that internet site, and it's taking forever, and oh, I'm getting impatient. Listen, when God doesn't show up, when we want God to show up, when he's silent, we tend to get impatient with God too. And that's what Israel's doing. They're impatient with God. They've been on their own for 3 months, and maybe they just felt stuck in that 4 month waiting for God. You ever felt stuck? What do you do when you feel stuck? Where do you go? How do you react? Do you justify your unkindness to people around you? You don't understand how bad I've had it this week. So therefore, I have the right to say, to do, to act, to think. And they would justify it. Maybe just like us, they've lived in this fast-paced society. That's Egypt, right? They didn't have a day off. Nothing was closed on Sundays. Like, it was constant 24/7. That was their life. It was constant run, 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 run. And that's all they knew. And they get to this other point where now they're in the wilderness and they're stuck next to this mount and they're just hanging out there like, now what's next? We can't go to the store, the shopping malls, they don't even exist out here. We're in the middle of nowhere. We get this weird manna and the water comes, and it's just weird. How would you feel if your television, your electricity, your cell phones all shut down for a month? Remember when Hurricane Sandy came through, right? And some of us, we lost our electric for like days. And if you're anything like me, here's what I'm doing. I think Home Depot still has a generator. I'm going. I can't afford it. I'm going. I got to have my electric. I've got to charge my phone. I've got to charge this, and I got to have that. And for several days, it was, and our minds were blown like, well, now what? And up in the Northeast and northern part of America, where they're now getting blizzards going across the North, and it's really amazing. And we've had blizzards. I remember back in 96, we had a blizzard that was just incredible, or 95, 96, that we had over 2 feet of snow, and everything stopped. I couldn't go to work for a week. I was stuck at home for a week. It was torture. You with me? Right? Some of you go to work to get a break. Can't wait for tomorrow. Like, hey, I get to go to work. I get it. I understand. Here's Israel stuck in the middle of nowhere. Moses is gone. They're sitting at the bottom of the mountain having no idea what's next. There's total silence. And now what? Stuck. Maybe they just don't like silence. Maybe they're getting anxious and they have no medication to deal with that. You see, for us, we expect God to move, and nothing happens sometimes. We are lonely, wanting for relationship. We're broke, wanting for jobs or business to succeed. We've been praying, and nothing's happening. We're disappointed with life, wanting others to follow Jesus even. We want that to happen. Nothing's happening the way we expect. And so what do when there's silence at the bottom of the mount? We all experience this. No one's exempt. This is a normal part of life, as a matter of fact. So here's what not to do. Don't erect a golden calf. Is everybody with me? Yeah, I'm not doing that. When you go home today, if you're feeling stuck, if you're feeling frustrated and stressed out, don't make a golden calf. That's not the point of the message, okay? So here's what we should do. I'll give you two quick points. When you feel like God is silent, here's the very simple part. Strengthen your faith. Strengthen your faith. Could you imagine if Aaron would have responded totally opposite the way that he responded? Here's what he could have done. He could have said, I'm going to remind you of what God has done. And then the second thing, I'm going to remind you that God's not done yet. Aaron could have totally done that. And do you realize that in our mind, when we're going to things that are totally opposite to God, when we're going to the golden calves in our lives, what we're doing is we're saying, hey, I don't have time to wait for God. I'll take matters into my own hand. And instead of doing that, if we were to stop and strengthen our faith and say, okay, wait. I'm going to remind myself of what God has done and remind myself of that God's not done yet. It could change everything. Psalm chapter 13, and by the way, if you're wondering about whether this is the only situation, you can actually go to several psalms in the Bible, Psalm 88 and several psalms where it talks about this, where it starts out with, God, where are you? Why are you silent? If you're struggling with God's silence, you're not the only one, is my point. Psalm chapter 13 gives us some insight here that I want to close out with. He starts out, how long, O Lord, will you forget about me forever? Have you ever said that to God? God, how long are you going to forget about me down here? I'm in Magnolia, remember? Hello, God? You there? This thing on? How long will you forget about me? Forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long are you going to be silent? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? I'm crying in here. This is killing me. How long shall my enemies be exalted over me? Consider, and he's demanding of God, consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death, lest my enemies say I have prevailed over him, lest my foes rejoice because I'm shaken. Have you ever gotten to that point? Where you just can't see how you're going to get through the day? Aaron, we can't get through another day without Moses. Just do something, get a God going here. We got to worship something. Or maybe you're in church and you're saying in your heart, God, how long are you going to forget about me? I've been trying to do this marriage the way you called me to, and I feel like you've forgotten about me. I've been trying to do finances the way you called me to, but I feel like you've forgotten about me. I'm trying to do this business the way you called me to. I'm trying to do schoolwork the way you called me to. I'm trying to do life the way you called me to, but to be honest, God, I feel like you have forgotten me. You're silent, and I feel like you don't care. That's what he's saying. Just a tiny little thing. when you pray, be honest. Do you get that? Don't fake it until you make it with God, because God knows what's going on really inside you. Be honest with God. So here's what he says in verse 5. He comes down to a point, as most psalms do, they come down to a point, and he says, but, not pause, stop, but, I've got all this, God, I feel like you're silent, consider and answer me, God, where are you, what's going on? But, I have trusted in your steadfast love. I have trusted. Here's what I'm reminding myself of the past. I'm reminding myself of what God has done. And Aaron could have stopped the people right there and said, time out, guys. I know you're frustrated. I know you're stressed. I know you're mad at God because he's not there. But listen, remember. Do you remember what happened? Do you remember the flies? Do you remember the darkness? Do you remember we got up to the Red Sea? We thought it was over. Do you remember when Moses opened his staff and all of a sudden the water went like this? Do you remember? When you feel that God is silent in your life, the first thing is to strengthen your faith by remembering what God has done back here. And maybe you look and you say, I don't remember a lot of things that God has done. Journal it. Write anything that God is doing today so that tomorrow and down the road, you will remember God's grace, God's mercy, God's love for you. So that in your moments of where God you feel is silent, your moments of darkness, you're looking back and you're saying, but God was alive then, God's not done. So remind yourself of what God has done. What he's done in the past gives me hope for today. And then he goes on, he says, my heart shall rejoice in your salvation. Do you see the context that he's actually speaking in? He's talking about past and present and the future. My heart shall future. In the future, my heart shall, as I'm looking back, rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. There's going to come a time where I know that God's not done. There's going to come a time where God figures all this stuff out. So he's not done yet. So I will sing. So while I'm struggling today and I feel like God's silent, I feel like things are just totally out of whack, God, I'm looking forward to that day where I'll sing of your salvation. I'll sing of how you redeem. I'll sing of that of what you're doing. And maybe you're there. Maybe this is not the message you're expecting. Like, it's going to be on thankfulness, right? Well, yeah, you thank God for what's in the past. That's part of it. But in order to stay close to God, you must strengthen your faith oftentimes just right here by reminding of what God has done and reminding us that God's not done yet. And the truth is, as we kind of pull this in and land the plane here, the truth is Jesus Christ had to do the same thing. It is not sinful to feel hopeless. It is not sinful to feel like God is silent. It is not sinful to go through a dark season. Even Jesus did. On the cross, while Jesus is crucified, he is hanging on this cross, and his blood is pouring out of his life, is just done. And while he's sitting there, he says this, my God, why have you forsaken me? God, where are you? You're silent. And he walked through a season of silence that we will never experience in that same way in this life. And he did that so we would never experience what he did. He experienced this, and yet he continued to be faithful to follow God through the silence. And he gave his life. He was willing to be abandoned by God, to be all alone. His friends rejected him. His family rejected him. Everyone is totally alone. Even God rejects him. Why? Because God's wrath was being poured out on him at that moment in time where he's pouring out the wrath that is intended for all of us. All of our sin was being poured on him, and God could not look at him at that point in time. So that he could redeem us, so that he could initiate and give us the opportunity to have a relationship with him, so that we can believe. But 3 days later, 3 days later, now this is the greatest hope ever. 3 days later, here's what happens. Jesus raises from the dead. Isn't that awesome? And that's my encouragement to each and every one of us. That while we might be sitting in that silent, that dark time of life, maybe that's what Thanksgiving's about for you. Maybe the holiday season, you're in darkness, you're in silence, you're like, God, I just want you here, but I can't say that in church because it seems weird to say that. I can't say that to my friends, and so I'm saying this privately and personally. God, where are you? I would say, based on the facts that I see lined up in all the lives talked about in Scripture, that God does his greatest work in darkness. The light shines the greatest when it's darkest in our lives, but it's painful to walk through, yes. And that's why we encourage ourselves to talk honestly to God. I'm in pain here. I know your steadfast love. I'm reminding myself of what you've done. And I know that, God, you're not done yet. But while I'm in the middle, in this silent, in this dark time, God, I'm struggling. And God does this amazing thing where he takes a life that feels dead and he makes it totally alive again. That's what he did with Jesus. And that's what he says he will do with us and continues to do as we faithfully follow him. So, the point, don't raise up any golden calves today. If God feels distant, if God feels silent, if you feel like you're in a dark place, talk to him about it. And as a church, we could grow in talking with others about this as well. Because every one of us will go through dark times, but we shouldn't do life alone. Life is much better connected. So keep following him there so that we can strengthen each other's faith and point people to what God has done and what God's going to do. And we'll believe and fully follow him together as we do. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you that you were so gracious with Israel that you poured out grace and mercy in their life, even at that point when they were rejecting you the most. And God, in our lives, there are times where we raise up golden calves. They look different, but Lord, there's times where we raise up the golden calf and we think that's a better way. Lord, forgive us. Draw us to you. Lord, I pray for some that I know this message is for someone here. I know that you guided this way for someone here. I pray that you would encourage them through their dark season even today. May you, Lord, just strengthen their faith and give them the courage to strengthen their faith in you, to remember what you have done and to know that you're not done yet. And we'll give you the praise. We thank you, God. We thank you for your love. Thank you for your mercy. Thank you for your grace. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.